This is part 13 of the set of collected talks and meditations by Rudolf Steiner called Staying Connected. These are much shorter pieces at the end, but I'm still going to separate them. Number 13 is a late lecture called Memento Mori, given in Dornach on July 4th, 1924. Partial part of it. Chapter 13, or section 13, lecture 13, part 13. Overview. In this late lecture, Rudolf Steiner speaks of following the dead in their destinies, the original meaning of memento mori, remember, you must die, in quotes. The souls of those who have died are interwoven with and are part of the spiritual world. As the individuality continues its journey and the incarnation just completed on earth is handed over to continue its work in the spiritual world, the hierarchies of divine spiritual beings receive the fruits of earthly life and transmute them, so that they too can continue to work for cosmic human evolution. It is important, Rudolf Steiner suggests, that we bear witness to this process with prayers that are simple and good, wonderful and beautiful. May the angels, archangels, and archai, principalities, weaving in the ether, receive the human being's web of destiny. May the righteous consequences of human earthly life die into the realm of being in the astral feeling of the cosmos, in the exousiai, powers, dynamis, virtues, curiosities, dominions. May the justly transmuted fruits of earthly life be resurrected in the thrones, the cherubim and the seraphim, as their deeds of being. Memento Mori, given in Dornach, July 4th, 1924. Ellipsis. In earthly life, as we have seen, the inner experience of karma is instinctive. It takes its course beneath the surface of consciousness, but the moment we pass through the gate of death, we become objectively conscious, during the first few days, of all the experiences we first underwent on earth. We have them before us in ever-expanding pictures. And what we thus behold as a great tableau of our life also contains all that took place instinctively in the working of our karma. When we pass through the gate of death and our life is unfolded, ever-expanding before our eyes, it includes all that was instinctive, the web of karma, which we were unconscious of in life. We do not actually see it in the first days after death, but what we would otherwise perceive only in pale images of memory, we now behold vividly as a living configuration. Nor do we fail to perceive that something more is contained in it than ordinary memory. And if, with the vision made possible by initiation, we look on all that we have before us at this stage, we can describe it as follows. Once we have passed through the gate of death, having possessed ordinary consciousness during earthly life, we see life spread out before us as a mighty panorama. But we see it only, quote-unquote, from in front. Initiation vision also sees it from the other side, quote-unquote, from behind, as it were. Ordinary human consciousness sees it only from one side, but initiation vision sees it from behind, so that the whole web of karmic relationships springs forth. This web of karmic relationships arises, to begin with, from the thoughts that lived within the will during a person's earthly life, but something else immediately enters into it. I have often emphasized that the thoughts we experience consciously during our earthly life are dead thoughts. But the thoughts that are woven into our karma, the thoughts that now emerge, are living. Living thoughts spring forth on the other side, as it were, of the panorama of our life. And now, this is a fact of untold significance. Now the beings of the third hierarchy draw near and receive what is springing forth from the other side, as it were, of the panorama. Angels, archangels, and archai draw it into themselves. They breathe it in. This takes place during the time when we ascend on our way upward, after death, to the edge of the moon sphere. Thereafter we enter the moon sphere and our backward journey through life begins. As we know, this lasts for a third of the time we spent on earth, or more accurately, for the same length of time that we spent in sleep while on earth. We may now ask ourselves, how does our state of ordinary sleep relate to the state in which we find ourselves immediately after death? Normally, when we go to sleep, we are as beings of soul and spirit only in our astral body and our eye. We do not have our etheric body with us, for this has remained behind in the bed. Hence our thoughts remain dead. They have no active power. They are mere pictures. But when we pass through the gate of death, we take our etheric body with us, and the etheric body begins to expand. Now the etheric body has a life-giving quality, not only for physical existence, but for thoughts themselves. Therefore, since we have brought the etheric body with us, our thoughts can become alive. The etheric body, as it were, let me read that again. The etheric body, as it frees itself, carries forth our living thoughts to the angels, archangels, and archai, who in their divine grace receive these thoughts. This, if I may so describe it, is the first act that is unfolded in the life between death and a new birth. Beyond the threshold of death, the beings of the third hierarchy approach what loosens itself from the human being, all that is entrusted to our etheric body as it dissolves away. The beings of the third hierarchy receive it into their care, and we as human beings on the earth can utter a simple and good, a wonderful and beautiful prayer when we think of the connection of life and death, or of one who has passed through the gate of death, by saying, quote, "Angels, archangels, and archai, weaving in the ether, receive the human being's web of destiny." Unquote. When we say these words, we turn our eyes to a real spiritual fact. Much depends upon whether human beings on the earth think the spiritual facts or not, whether they simply accompany the dead with thoughts that remain behind on the earth, or accompany them on their further path with thoughts that are a true image of what takes place in that other realm they have entered. This, my dear friends, seems so infinitely desirable to initiation science, that we shall have thoughts in earthly life that are a true image of real spiritual happenings. By merely thinking of theories, enumerating so many higher members of the human being and the like, we cannot achieve union with the spiritual world. We can do so only by thinking the realities enacted there. Therefore, human hearts should be ready to hear once more what human hearts did hear in the old ages of initiation, in the ancient mysteries, when the words were called out impressively again and again to those about to be initiated, quote, "Accompany the dead in their further destinies," unquote, or, quote, "Memento mori," unquote, is all that is left of it now, a more or less abstract exhortation that no longer deeply affects human beings, for it no longer expands our consciousness into a life that is more living than this life in the world of the senses. We can see the reception of the human web of destiny by angels, archangels, and archai unfolding as follows. There is the impression that this web, quote, "lives and moves and has its being," unquote, in a bluish-violet ethereal atmosphere, lives and weaves in the bluish-violet atmosphere of the ether. Once the etheric body is dissolved, that is, when the thoughts have been breathed in by the angels, archangels, and archai, then, after a few days, discarnate souls enter that backward course of life I have described to you. There they experience their deeds, impulses of will, tendencies of thought. They experience how they worked on other people to whom they did either good or evil. They enter right into the minds and feelings of those others. They do not live in their own mind. With the clear consciousness that it is their concern, they undergo all that took place in the depths of the souls of the other human beings with whom they entered into any kind of karmic relationship, to whom they did anything whatever, good or ill. And once again we can see how what human beings experience there is received. They experience it in full reality, a reality more real than sensory reality between birth and death. They experience a reality in which they stand more fully, more glowingly than in any reality of earthly life here below. But if we look at it once more from the other side, with the vision and insight of initiation, we see all that the human being experiences being received into the essence, the reality, and being of the curiosities, dynamis, and exousiae. These spiritual beings draw into themselves, as it were, the negative of the human deeds. This wondrous process unfolds before the initiate's vision. The consequences of human actions, transformed in righteousness and justice, are taken up into the exousiae, dynamis, and curiosities. Now, seeing all this transports those who have this vision into such a consciousness that they know they are in the center of the sun, the center of our whole planetary system. They behold what is now taking place from the sun. They see a lilac-colored living and weaving, the exousiae, dynamis, and curiosities absorbing the human deeds, transformed into righteousness, in the living and weaving of a pale violet, lilac-colored astral atmosphere. Here we have the truth. The aspect of the sun that appears to us on earth is only the one side. Here on earth the sun is seen from the periphery, while from the center the sun is seen as the field of action for the living spiritual deeds of exousiae, dynamis, and kyriotetes. There it is all spiritual action, spiritual happening. There we find the other side, as it were, of the pictures of the earthly life we experienced consciously here between birth and death. Once again we can think truly of what is happening there. We must think of the word verwesen, usually used to mean fade or die, or the process of destruction and passing from existence. In its true and original meaning, verwesen means, quote, to carry the real being away, unquote, as when we say to forgive or to forego, which really means a giving away in devotion. Thinking thus, we may say, quote, in exousiae, dynamis, and kyriotetes, in the astral feeling of the cosmos, the righteous consequences of human earthly life die into the realm of being. Unquote. Finally, this too is accomplished. The one who has died has now lived through a third of the time of the past earthly life. Journeying backward, the soul feels itself once more at the starting point of earthly life, in the spaces of the spirit, at the moment before entry into the past earthly life. And now we may say the discarnate soul enters through the center of the sun into the real, quote, spirit land, unquote. There, earthly deeds transformed into divine righteousness are received into the activity of the first hierarchy. They come into the domain of seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. As the dead step out into this new kingdom, they feel, quote, all that took place through me on earth is now being received by seraphim, cherubim, and thrones into their own active being, unquote. Consider well what this means, my dear friends. We are thinking truly of what happens to the dead in their further life after death, when we cherish the thought that the web of destiny, which the departed one wove here on earth, is caught up, to begin with, by the angels, archangels, and archai. In the next part of the life, between death and a new birth, they bear it into the kingdom of exousiae, dynamis, and kyriotetes. These, in turn, are gathered in and woven round by the beings of the first hierarchy. And in the process, ever and again, human action upon earth is received into the being, into the deeds of being, into the living action of the thrones and cherubim and seraphim. Thus to the first and the second saying we must now add the third, quote, in thrones and cherubim and seraphim, as their deeds of being, the justly transmuted human fruits of the earthly life are resurrected, unquote. Thus we can turn the gaze of initiation upon what is going on perpetually in the spiritual world. Here on earth we have the unfolding of human life and action, with human beings' instincts of karma, their ceaseless weaving of destiny, a weaving more or less similar to the weaving of thought. Looking up into the spiritual worlds, we see there what were once human earthly deeds, having passed through Angeloi, Archangeloi, Archai, Exousiae, Dynamis, and Kyriotetes, being received by the thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, and expanding as their heavenly deeds above. 1. Angels, archangels, and archai, weaving in the ether, receive the human being's web of destiny. 2. In exousiae, dynamis, and kyriotetes, in the astral feeling of the cosmos, the righteous consequences of human earthly life die into the realm of being. 3. In thrones, cherubim, and seraphim, as their deeds of being, the justly transmuted fruits of earthly life are resurrected. This is a succession of spiritual facts infinitely sublime and significant, especially for our present age. For the dominion of Michael has now begun, and in this historic moment for the world, it is as though we could behold the deeds of those who lived upon earth before the end of the Kali Yuga in the 1880s and 1890s, footnote C. Rudolf Steiner, the Archangel Michael, Hudson, New York, Anthroposophic Press, 1994. End of footnote. What was then enacted in human beings on earth has now been received by thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. Yet never was the spiritual contrast of light so great as it is today in the realm of these spiritual facts. In the 1880s, one could look upward and see how the deeds of people of the period of revolution in the middle of the 19th century were received by thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. But as one looked, a kind of dark cloud settled over the middle of the 19th century. When one then saw, passing into the realm of seraphim and cherubim and thrones, lit up only a very little. But today, when we look back at all that took place at the end of the 19th century, human deeds, people's relationships to one another, having seen it clearly only a short time ago, it vanishes away. We still saw it clearly a moment ago, then all that took place in that declining age of the Kali Yuga wafted away like thought masses before our eyes. We saw what was worked out in destiny among the human beings of the end of the Kali Yuga, and then it vanished. And we beheld in clear, radiant light what became of it as it passed heavenward. This bears witness to the immense importance of what is presently taking place in the transmutation of the earthly deeds of human beings into the heavenly deeds of souls. What we experience as our destiny or karma takes place for us, within and about us, from earthly life to earthly life. But in the heavenly worlds, the consequences of what we did and experienced on earth go on working, and they work on even into the historic shaping of this earthly life. For there are many things that are not grasped or controlled by the individual human being here upon earth. My dear friends, you must take this statement in its full weight and importance. The individual experiences his or her destiny. Let me read that again. The individual experiences his or her destiny. But as soon as two human beings are working together, something more arises, more than resolution of their individual destinies. Something takes place between the two that transcends the individual experiences of either. Ordinary consciousness does not perceive the connection between what happens among human beings and what goes on in the spiritual worlds above. For ordinary consciousness, the connection is most clearly established when sacred spiritual actions are brought into this physical world of sense, as when in sacred cult or ritual, human beings consciously transform their physical actions so as to make them actions of the spiritual world at the same time. But in a far wider sphere, all that happens between human beings is more than what the individual experiences as destiny. Everything that is not merely individual destiny, but is brought about by the feeling together and working together of individuals on earth, is forever in connection with the deeds of seraphim and cherubim and thrones above. Into the latter flow the deeds of human beings in their mutual connection with one another, as well as individual earthly human lives. Most important at this point is the wider range of vision that opens out for the initiate. For today, as we look upward, we behold the heavenly deeds and consequences of what took place on earth in the late 1870s through the 1890s. And it is as though a fine spiritual rain were falling to the earth, moistening human souls, impelling them to many things that arise historically in our time, in the relations between one human being and another. Once more we can see how what was enacted here on earth by human beings of the 1870s through the 1890s exists again today in living mirror images of thought through seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. When one sees through these things, one must repeatedly think, here I am speaking with a human being of today. What he or she says to me out of commonly accepted opinion, not from personal emotions or inner impulses, but simply as a person of this age, often seems as if it is connected with human beings who lived in the 1870s through the 1890s of the last century. Indeed, it is so. We see many human beings today as though they were in a meeting of departed spirits, surrounded by human beings who are busily at work on them. But in reality they are only the after-images, rained down from heaven, of what lived through human beings upon earth in the last third of the 19th century. Thus, in a spiritual sense, the shades, the real ghosts, I would say, of a former age are roaming about in a later age. This is one of the more intimate workings of karma, which are indeed widely present in the world, though they frequently remain unnoticed even by the most occult of occultists. What one would fain whisper to many today when they enter some stereotyped opinion, quote, that was said to you by this person or that, of the last third of the 19th century. Ellipsis. Unquote. End of lecture.